Good morning and welcome to the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors meeting for August the 3rd. Will you please stand and join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I'll leave this for you to do.
We'll start the meeting this morning with a presentation regarding August 2010 as Child Support Awareness Month in Stanislaus County from Tamara Thomas.
Good morning, Chairman Grover, Board Members, CEO Robinson, and County Council Doering. Tamara Thomas, Assistant Director, Department of Child Support Services. It is my pleasure to address you this morning and to represent the department in recognition of 2010's Child Support Awareness Month. This week is the start of Child Support Awareness Month. DCSS takes this opportunity each year to remind parents that child support is crucial to the financial security and well-being of 1.8 million children and families statewide. The theme of this year's Child Support Awareness Month is Child Support, a Chance for a Brighter Future. 2010 also marks the 10th anniversary of DCSS, commemorating a decade of service to California's children and families by securing the financial support children need to grow, learn, and become successful adults. As of June 30th, 2010, the department has approximately 35,600 cases. The department is adapting to and utilizing increased statewide automation, but we also recognize the importance that personal contact and customer service provides to keep child support dollars flowing to families in need. We recognize the customers in our communities continue to need assistance from the department, and we expect with the continuing budget concerns in California social services arenas that child support needs to be a sustainable future availability in future years. The mission statement of the department is shown on the screen before you. Of those 35,600 cases, approximately 17% are in need of case establishment services. That is, court orders need to be established, paternity needs to be established. Of the 73% of enforcement cases, those are cases where we do locate work. Those are cases where we actually take cases into court, we handle contempts. We oftentimes are modifying cases on behalf of families. The other 10% that make up that caseload are requests from other jurisdictions to establish and enforce on their behalf, other states primarily. Since federal fiscal year 2000, states have been evaluated for federal incentive funds based on five performance measures that you'll see before you. These five measures are direct outcomes of our mission statement. They're related to the process of establishing and enforcing a child support case, and the measures are an important part of determining program effectiveness. These program measures are incorporated in the goals of California's new 2010-2014 strategic plan, which was a process I was fortunate enough to be involved in with the state in developing that five-year plan. And I know that there are some critical strategies that are in line with this board's priorities that we expect as a department we will be going forward with this year. The department staff are currently seeking new ways to support that strategic plan, and as well as continuing to do those things that have made us successful thus far. And we're fortunate that many of those things do support that strategic plan over the next 5 years. The need for child support. One quarter of the nation's children receive child support services, and three quarters of single parent families are considered below the poverty level and require and need and rely on that support. Should child support stop in those services, again, it would mean that they would need to revert to other social service programs that, as we know, funding is becoming a scarce reality for some of those programs. Increases in those social service areas are draining and cause additional dollars to be spent where we could step in and provide those funds. For the 09-10 state fiscal year in Stanislaus County, we've distributed more than $47.5 million in child support fund. And as I'll show you later, despite staffing decreases, we've been able to sustain that 47.5 with very little decrease in collection despite our staffing losses. One of the other aspects of the child support program is to provide health insurance to those families who are in need. In each of our orders, we obtain an order for health insurance, and where a responsible party has the ability to cover that child, we are able to enforce that, to provide a notice to the employer that allows us to seek and enforce that health insurance for children. And we know that this is important. We know that this is a piece of our program, essentially because we know that children who have access to health care coverage and insurance have greater physical and mental success through their childhood and into their adulthood. You would think that the benefits of child support would be obvious, but there are some that I would like to point out that perhaps aren't as obvious. The primary benefactor for child support, obviously, is the child, and financial security is necessary for children. It's necessary for survival. Beyond those basic survival needs, children can benefit from using child support to participate in educational and social activities that foster development. I've provided each of you, board members, the face of child support. It actually is a day in the life of where each county identified how child support, how health insurance has impacted the personal stories of families, and many of the benefits to children you'll find listed in that publication. We've recognized that every dollar collected can make a difference in a child's life and the quality of that life. Benefits of child support are important to parents. And while we live in a somewhat contentious environment, people are usually not getting a hold of us because they love each other and they want to make life easy for themselves. They usually don't want the government involved in their lives. But we do provide a service to both parents. Our vision is that those parents will become engaged with their children and that they can assist the parents in reducing stress in the household for those children by offering that financial support. It does reduce the amount of stress in the home. As I mentioned, the department also does have a vision statement. The department will put children first by helping both parents assume responsibility for the economic and social well-being, health, and stability of their children. We recognize the value of our department and the improved relationship with both of those parents. That hasn't always been the historical nature of our department. We haven't been seen as a real advocate for both parents. We recognize that that absolutely has to be part of our mission. What is the child support program? Parents who do not live with their children are required by federal and state law to regulate, to contribute to the services of child support. They have an obligation to provide financial and medical support, and oftentimes they are coming to us to look for answers from a child support professional to provide that information about alternative options that they may have in terms of their child support cases. We truly are stewards of tax monies, and I think it was Supervisor Monteith, who's not here today, who mentioned in another forum that we were presenting in, that child support really is the best-kept secret for the county in terms of revenue recovery. We receive our money from the federal government and state government. We're not a general fund department, and as such, we recoup monies for the county as well. So for the county, and I'll show you those figures in a moment, we really are revenue-generating for Stanislaus County. I'm very much relieved that both the legislature and the governor did not impact child support funding this year for the second year in a row. The department is using existing resources of those funds that we receive from the federal and state to really focus on early intervention programs. And we have it's been shown this past year in our studies that early intervention, making that connection up front, fosters the improvement and onset of continuing payments. When we've done a controlled study against our early intervention cases, it is about a 30% increase in terms of payments received when we make that contact and make that upfront connection with the parents. The department has continued to take the opportunity to work with many county departments. We understand that partnering with these agencies reinforces community efforts to ensure that families receive benefits in every area of the child's life. And recently, we've partnered with the California Department of Corrections to provide an instructional video to inmates who currently have child support cases who might need modification in their child support matters. We'll be providing that to the Sheriff's Office, to the Parole Department, and also probation. We're grateful for these professional relationships, many which have developed through this board's effective partnership priority, and we're committed to continuing and finding new opportunities for partnering. These numbers can be a little overwhelming, and I really want to focus not so much on the numbers, but the value that it provides to the community. We have, as of last year, surpassed in the last 7 years the $300 million mark, which, when you think about the size of this county and the families that we serve, that's an incredible impact to them. It's an incredible value to what it brings back to their home lives. In addition to this revenue that we bring in, the state has a new cost-effectiveness measure that they are promoting this year. I'm fortunate to say, and I know Supervisor DeMartini always enjoys this statistic, we have historically been around for every dollar we spend, we collect about $2.65. We're up over the $3 mark, and we expect that to rise this year as well. The state, unfortunately, has some work to do. They are at about $2.25 overall. Previously referenced the correlation between staff and collections, and in this chart you can see how our funding has been pretty flat over the last 3 years, but our staffing issues as a result of the rise in budget costs have significantly declined. What I'm very proud to look at is that there has been very minimal drop in funding, in collection, I'm sorry, related to the loss of staffing. I want to personally thank the staff, and I've invited several of them here today. I'd like them to stand and be recognized for their continued encouragement, their efficiency in making this program work. So if they could please stand and be recognized. I truly do continue to be impressed and inspired by what they're able to accomplish every day. Many of them are carrying caseloads of 1,400 to 2,000. That's a lot of public contact. That's a lot of work. When you think about those performance measures that we have to accomplish, they indeed are engaged in finding ways to continue to meet and exceed the performance measures despite the challenges that we've been facing. Here are the figures that I referenced regarding recruitment to Stanislaus County. These monies go back into the community service agency to help pay out for the monies that are expended for welfare. Again, the budget decisions that California is making related to child support funding allow us to continue to keep doing this. You'll see a slight decrease in 09-10. That's just simply because we haven't carried through the June figures. Those are only figures through May. Today, our presentation to you has identified three focuses of the child support program. It is a direct benefit to families, both children and parents. It's a cost avoidance program for maintaining folks to be able to be self-sufficient and stay off of public assistance when they can. The child support program is revenue generating, and it reimburses governments the cost associated with public assistance. And lastly, and most importantly, we want healthy families. We want healthy children in Stanislaus County who will be growing up and have the needs that they have, the needs met that they need to be productive citizens. This year we're doing a second but Get Back on the Road Again campaign. This is our opportunity to have folks re-engage with their child and their child support responsibilities. There is a criteria for eligibility. We want them to just simply make 1 month's payment. Doesn't matter how far behind they are. We want them to make that 1 month payment, and $25 towards the arrears will release their license under those conditions and get them re-engaged with paying their support. You can find more information on our website at that address there, or you can simply call 866-901-3212. In closing, I want to thank the board for their time today in recognizing August as Child Support Awareness Month. Extend my appreciation to Ms. Sharon Wardell Trejo for assisting me today in driving the PowerPoint. Most importantly, thank the staff from the department for being present and for their continued fortitude, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
Any questions for Ms. Thomas?
I'd like to say any department that can raise $3 for every one spent is doing a really good job. I used to know the old director pretty well, David Ingersoll. Went to child support court a number of times to watch the cases coming up. Always felt your department did a really fine job in handling the cases.
Well, I appreciate that, and we'd encourage any member who would like to attend or come visit to also do that. It's quite an experience, and you can really see the wheels in motion.
Tamara, I have a board resolution if you'd like to come up.
I'd be happy to.
It.
Thank you.
I think this is mainly to keep Mr. Jones fully occupied with his position, but you've made a lot of good comments today, and on behalf of the board, we'd like to present you with this resolution, noting that August is Child Support Awareness Month, and thank you and all of your staff for all the good work you do. Opportunity now for public comment. Anything that anybody would care to share with the Board of Supervisors that's not an agenda item would be appropriate at this time. Just come forward. Okay, I don't see that there's anyone here to do that today. We have a consent calendar, which are all the items listed on the agenda that don't have an asterisk, that do have an asterisk beside them. Unless there is a request to pull those from the consent calendar, we will act on them with one motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion from Supervisor O'Brien, second from Supervisor Chiesa. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Brings us down 4-0. Please make that correction. Item B6, which is approval of the schematic design of the juvenile commitment facility and related actions. Ms. Hill Thomas. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. Patty Hill Thomas from the Chief Executive Office. We're pleased to bring to you today the schematic design for the juvenile commitment facility. I'd just like to recognize our team who's worked very hard so far on this effort, in addition to your board support for this very important project. Our team includes our probation officer, Jerry Powers, assistant probation officer, Jill Silva, Natasha Roof, Dave Camilo, and Devon Fiera from probation, Don Feemister, Daryl Long, Tim Fedorchek from Capital Projects with help from Mark Lozier and Leticia Lamelli. And in the audience today are design professionals from the Lyonakis design firm that you authorized us to hire last January. Maynard Feist will present the schematic design, and in the audience is Greg Pierce from the Modesto office. We've been really blessed to have a local architectural presence on this project as well. As your board well knows, many of you traveled to Sacramento to support the county's top-ranked application to be awarded $18 million to build a juvenile commitment facility, and Chief Powers will talk to you about the importance of that. We are pleased, but we have much work to do, and much work has been done. We have been working very hard on planning, design, debating the opportunities and the options, looking at developing partners both with the Office of Education and the Modesto Junior College, who's our neighbor at the Blue Gum area. This project is at its most important part because every project to be successfully delivered needs to start out right. And this project has been independently estimated by two outside estimators, and it's well within the project budget and project scope approved by the board. It will heavily be regulated by the state of California through the State Public Works Board. That's a new requirement for the construction projects under Senate Bill 81, and the state has approved these plans. We've also met all of the due diligence requirements of the state of California. This is a partnership between the county and the state, but it will deliver in the end an important part of our juvenile justice facility needs and program needs. If we look at the next chart, you're used to seeing this in the context of our capital projects. It's our big checklist. You can see all the activities that have been approved so far. Today we're asking your board to consider the schematic design. I want to assure you that all of the remaining check marks and actions and milestones come back to your Board of Supervisors for approval. We are fortunate to have dedicated funds to use as the county's match. The total project cost, as you may recall, is a little over $24 million, with $18 million coming from the state of California. Those county match set-aside funds are being spent for the initial design and planning. The most important milestone that we have yet to achieve will be actually receiving the money from the state. And we will not ask your board to consider awarding a construction contract without the assurance that it's there. We're working very hard with the state. They're working under very difficult financial matters as well. But this project is probably going to be one of the first juvenile justice projects built under state funding, probably following only one other AB 900, you might recall, jail construction project in the state. So we're really engaged with the state, and we'll assure you again that we won't come back and ask to award that construction contract without the commitment of funds having been made with the state. Lots of work that we're going to summarize today, but it's my pleasure to turn it over now to our Chief Probation Officer, Jerry Powers.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jerry Powers, Chief Probation Officer. As Patty said, this journey started a long time ago, several years ago, with kind of a hope and a wish. We're at a point today where we can actually show you some schematic drawings. We've come a long ways, but there is still a long ways to go. When this first started, I really was hoping and praying that we would have an opportunity for this. It has been probably one of the more tenuous projects to this point as far as financing, the county's ability to finance our portion, as well as the state's financial conditions. I'll give you an update on where we are with the state today. But as opposed to a year 18 months ago when I spoke to you and I was really kind of hopeful and all of that, today I have quiet confidence that we're going to be able to pull this project off. I'm not ready to stand up on top of 10th Street Place and shout it from the rooftops, but I am quietly confident that we will see this facility come to fruition at some point in the next couple years, which is a huge leap from where we started. So with respect to the total project cost, $24 million, it's kind of a unique financing structure, and I've previously spoke to you about how this is being done. Essentially, what the state is going to do is they're going to provide $18 million in construction funding for us to build this on our property. The way the state financing works is the financing can only pay for the hard construction, the bricks, the mortar, the infrastructure parts of this. So the county is essentially putting up the $6 million match, which is all of the preliminary design work, environmental review, the staff time, the property, and all of that. So we will essentially have used our match to get us to the point where we can start turning dirt. At that point, the state will kick in. And as Ms. Hill-Thomas said, we won't proceed to that point until we come back to you and we've got an assurance from the state that the $18 million is there. An overview of the project. Essentially, the project is a 60-bed juvenile commitment facility. It's adjacent to but separate from our current juvenile hall, and that's by requirement of the state financing structure. It's going to contain a 30-bed and two 15-bed units. We envision that one of the 15-bed units will probably be a girls' unit. The other 45 beds will be for males. It will contain a multi-purpose gymnasium visiting area. It will also contain a kitchen, a master kitchen that will serve the entire complex, including the juvenile detention, the juvenile hall. Our current kitchen at juvenile hall has sorely outlived its lifespan. So in many ways, we're going to be leveraging this state project to assist us with some of our current infrastructure needs at the current facility. The large multi-purpose area that I spoke of and that you'll see in, when Maynard comes up to walk you through the design will also serve as a visitor center for the entire facility. Currently, when we have visiting at our juvenile hall, the parents come down into the units, which presents logistical problems for us because there's a potential to introduce contraband into the unit, as well as those individuals who don't get visits essentially get locked in their rooms during visiting. So the opportunity for a master kitchen, for a large visitor center, for some multi-purpose counseling areas is gives us the ability to stretch these dollars much further for the benefit of the entire juvenile population. Next slide, please. As part of the process, we have engaged our neighbors in that area. On May 1st, we had our open house, which we advertised countywide. Additionally, we sent out personal invitations to each of our neighbors in that area, inviting them to come and meet at one of two meetings with myself, Capital Project staff, the architect, to discuss our plans for that for the new facility and for the site in general as part of an outreach effort to the community. We had between 15 and 20 individuals show up. They were very interested in the facility. We had some schematic boards to show them of where the facility was going to be located. A few of them had concerns about dust issues during construction. Was there going to be a lot of dust raised and things like that? Generally, they were very positive. We had a question about the actual location of the facility on the overall county site, and when we look at the overview, you'll have a better idea. We're actually locating this on the MJC side of the property. So for noise concerns and noise issues, that essentially addressed that for them. So there really were no negative issues or concerns by our neighbors. We haven't received any since. Gave them all my number and contact information. Additionally, we have it up on our website. If they wish to look at the progress, we have a tab on the probation department website so that they can get updated as we move through this process. Now, typically, we don't bring schematic designs back to the board. My understanding is that it's farther along in the process. Frankly, the reason we're bringing a schematic back to you is because of the tenuous nature of this entire process. This is the first time the state of California has done this, partnered with locals in this matter. They're doing it with the AB 900 jail projects as well as the SB 81 projects. We're kind of married at the hip there. It has been unique. We've had to go probably a little bit slower than we would normally go for a project like this because at every point we have to get state concurrence in this. And that's not just through today, but that's going forward as well. We have to submit schematics to the state. They review it to make sure it meets all of their requirements. We'll submit the construction documents to the state. So there are a lot of cross checks that happen to ensure that this project is a viable project from the state's perspective. One of the changes that has occurred in the financing mechanism from when we last talked to you, at the last presentation I talked about how the state for public works projects use what's called the pooled money investment account, which is when they build bridges, roads, things like that. They use the interim financing as this pooled money investment account. And they use that to fund the construction, and then when the project's done, they go back and they sell the project and replenish this pooled money investment account. As we've heard in the last couple years, because of the state finances, sometimes this pooled money investment account dries up, and there's not enough money in it to fund some of these projects. About a year ago, you may remember, because of budget issues and bond, when the bond market essentially ceased, they stopped some of the state highway projects and things like that. They idled the bulldozers, and they stopped these projects. That's been a concern for us here locally. It's been a concern for other counties as well that are involved in the AB 900 projects, is what happens if we get to this point and the pool dries up. We had conversations with the state, and what they've agreed to do is to essentially take our project as well as the adult projects that are out there and take them out of that pooled money investment financing process and use Department of Finance State General Fund for the interim financing portion of this. So assuming that there's not a negative balance in the State General Fund, we feel like we're more secure for that interim financing. The project will still be financed at the end by the state selling bonds on the ultimate project, but it makes the interim financing a little bit more secure for us. We're not going to have to get behind the Bay Bridge to get money for this. We're not going to have to get behind some state highway project or something of a higher priority. That has been critical for us as far as raising our level of confidence. I feel better about the financing today than I did when we first started this project. So that's a positive sign. The second part of this that makes me feel better, frankly, is that there is an agreement, and I think you'll see when the budget gets passed. There's an additional $300 million that's going to be put into the juvenile construction projects. Right now, we competed in a pool of $100 million. The state is committed to this to the point where they're going to add an additional $300 million into this project. I don't think you'd see them doing that, and the legislature is in agreement with this. I don't think you'd see them doing that if they didn't feel like these were worthwhile projects. So I'm very hopeful that this project is starting to gain steam. There has been discussion about design-build processes being applied to these projects. We are ready to go however this thing comes down. We will continue to come back to you and update you. You're going to see some designs today that I think are very indicative of the type of project that we're going to do. This facility is going to be the cornerstone for that juvenile justice campus for decades to come. We want to make sure that the cornerstone is stable and that it's going to provide what we need going forward, so that as we build out, it will provide the essential stability for the rest of that juvenile justice plan. So with that, I would like to turn over to Maynard Feist, who is the lead architect on this project. And at the end, if you have questions, I'll certainly be here to answer any as well. So, Mr. Feist.
Thank you. Again, my name's Maynard Feist. I'm with Lyon-Ockes, and on behalf of Lyon-Ockes, we appreciate the opportunity to present the schematic design to the fellow board members. With me is Greg Pierce. He's my counterpart in Modesto. He helps run our Modesto office, so we have a local presence, and we're divvying up the work on getting the work done for the design. We've worked quite a bit with Probation Department as well as Capital Projects, and working with a lot of different public agencies, I can honestly say this is a joy working with the team you've assembled for this. Often we get involved with projects with varying different departments that don't always work well together or play nice in the sandbox. You're very fortunate to have a group that you have. They're very, very demanding on what they want, and they know what they want. And they're very decisive and work together and collaborative. So I commend you on the staff that you do have working on this project. When we design these facilities, they can always be challenging because they're so unique, and they're very unique on how they operate. And each individual department wants to operate a little bit different. And I think the pleasure that we've had on this is that bringing some of those past experiences that we've had on designing other juvenile detention facilities, bringing them forth, having a fresh new look on how we can integrate some of those lessons learned, how other facilities operate. They've been receptive, and we've integrated some of those design elements into the facility that we have today to show you. And The way we started with the project and the scope is that we wanted to go back and revisit and validate some of those assumptions we had talked about during the master planning effort. And we wanted to make sure that we had challenged ourselves enough to make sure that we understand where we're going, what the current needs are, not only today, but what they're going to be needing in the future. So we wanted to have the flexibility and have as much multi-purpose space within this facility as we could. As Jerry mentioned, because this is state bond funded, we want to really make sure we capitalize. And we want to make sure we capitalize on those dollars to get the most out of this project we can. So you're going to see in some of the design elements how we capitalize to not only benefit the new facility, but also benefit the existing facilities, such as the multi-purpose, the visitation, as well as the kitchen. We also wanted to make sure that we're going to have something that is going to not only stand the test of time, but something that is current with today's technology as well as current programs and current opportunities to integrate some of those programs. Because you don't have a commitments facility, it's hard to really integrate some of those true meaningful programs. Now that you're going to have a commitment facility that stand alone and have residents there that are going to be there for a longer period of time, this really affords you the opportunity to integrate some of those programs, make a difference in some of the youth's lives, and make them better going out than they were coming in. You have a strong opportunity not only with programs but education, mental health, and some of those other support services that are going to be coming in. And when we did start the project, we wanted to make sure we had established some critical success factors, some goals for the project, and we want to keep looking at those goals as we move forward, making sure that we're being true to those goals. Some of those goals, real briefly, are we want to create a safe and secure facility, not only for the wards, but also for the staff who are going to be in there every day, and the support services that are going to have to provide services to the youth, as well as the public. The public's going to be coming in and interacting not only with the youth, but also staff members and that large multi-purpose visitation. So we want to make it a safe and secure facility. That's paramount. And we also want to minimize the movement between the living units and how you bring those services to the youth. That's really critical and for not only safe and security reasons, but also for staff efficiencies. We want to create a more normalized environment. We wanted to downplay the institutional feeling. We want to make sure that the wards are in an environment that fosters learning, fosters teamwork, fosters a sense of place, make sure that they understand that this is an opportunity for them to make a difference and change. And we also want to have a thermally efficient facility because we know that, you know, the capital costs are one thing, but the long-term operational costs are really what cost the county. So we want to make sure that we're being very efficient with not only the thermal systems that we're going to put in place, the mechanical systems, electronic controls, and so forth. We want to make sure we have something that's not real proprietary so that the facility can operate real efficiently and maintain these systems. And then last but not least, the very important thing is we want to make sure that we have a suicide-resistant facility. Because of the type of residents that are going to be in here, we want to make sure that we're going to create an environment that is really suicide resistant, especially in their sleeping rooms, so we can minimize any potential for suicides. Go ahead, next slide. This slide right here is an overall view of this campus. You can see the existing facility on the south side. There's residential on both the west and the south side of the facility. And then MJC is on the east side of the facility. And when we started this, as Jerry mentioned, we wanted to make sure that we could define an area on the site that is separate because of the SB 81 carve-out requirements, but also adjacent to the existing facility because we're going to be having to bring services back and forth to both facilities, as well as bringing wards back and forth between the two facilities for some of these programs as well as the visitation. And then the food service is a big component. We'll go to the next slide. This is a colored site plan that is a colored landscaping plan, and you can see some of the components and how it's really set up on the site. We want to make sure we have a public face. We have a detention side, so we have a secure and a non-secure facility. What we wanted to make sure is when we brought the public into this side of the facility, it was a very clear understanding on how you're supposed to enter this facility. And then we want to have a secure side, which abuts the existing, not only for the detained wards, but also for their outdoor rec and their opportunity to go out and do their large muscle exercise. We have secure staff parking on the north side. The staff will have their fenced-in area and their separate entrance into the facility. And then the public will have their own public parking, which is primarily going to be used for those visitation periods of time. And then we have a services side, which is going to bring in the food, the goods in and out of the facility, as well as transporting those goods back and forth, which is on the south side. And then you can see some of the outdoor play areas that we've created for them. This mimics really what they have right now. We also were instrumental on making sure that we don't do some of the things that were done before. So we want to make sure we have a running track for them, which is decomposed granite. We have hard outdoor play areas for them, one off of each of the units, and then a larger shared hardscape area. Next slide. This is an overall plan, and to get to this level, it took quite a few options and design conferences. And as Jerry mentioned, there's three basic elements to the facility. You're going to have the public side, you're going to have the detention side, which consists of detained housing units, one 30-bed, and that's on the north side, and then two 15-bed units, which are back-to-back right in the center there. We're very cognizant of how this growth is going to happen down the road in the future. So you can see the large north-south spine, the long spine for circulation. That'll provide us an opportunity to grow not only to the north and expand to the north, but we also included a east-west spine up a little bit higher. There you go. And that will afford us opportunity to grow to the west, and that'll also incrementally provide more housing as well as academic classrooms and program space. And let's break it up into a couple little larger scale areas. This is the northern half. You can see the 30-bed housing unit right there, which consists of a mix of different types of sleeping rooms, some singles, some doubles, and then we have a couple dormitories. As Jerry mentioned, each one of the units will have an interview room as well as a screening room, which is for medical and incidental screenings. And it'll be a direct supervision where staff are in there, so they have their workroom and staff toilets and their shower and Title 24 requirements. And then we also provided a educational suite, which consists of four separate classrooms. And they're all kind of in this pinwheel design so that we can maximize the staffing. So we'll have one probation officer at a staff station there that's dedicated to supervise the academic activities that go on during the day. Also, these classrooms will afford, because they're not attached to the unit, it affords more flexibility for the educational types of individual wards that will be in there. Because there's always a problem when we design these facilities and when we attach them to the day rooms, because then you're stuck with those kids that have special education needs and so forth. As long as we can have a separate classroom for them, it really helps doing that. And then we have two program rooms, and the two large group program rooms really afford the opportunity to integrate some sort of a program that can be an academic as well as a tactile and learning environment. So we provided two of those program rooms back-to-back with shared resources there. And then we have a central control. The central control is right at the intersection of the two main corridors. That's the heartbeat of the facility, controls movement, and also monitors all the cameras and so forth. And then we have the administration side. The administration side is really set up to take care of the administrative needs just for this facility. It's not really doing anything for the existing juvenile hall. So we have some director's office. We have some shared program rooms as well as some shared supervisor's office. We have a training room. And then we have a large multi-purpose area in the upper north half there that will really be multifunctional for a variety of training as well as group interviews and meeting sessions. Then we have a 15-bed unit, as you can see there, and it's a mirror image on the south side. That is also a mix of single and double sleeping rooms, and then the shared support services for staff and work areas. And then we have the public lobby. I don't know if you can go back to this slide there. The public lobby. This is the face that we have to bring the public into, which is going to be used primarily for some interaction of administration needs, but more so for the visitation. Can we go to the next slide? And as Jerry said, this is going to be a truly a multi-purpose room, this large indoor rec area that can be used not only for this facility but for the existing facility. So if you have inclement weather, there's a place where you can take the kids for recreation. We're also going to utilize this for visitation, and this is an area that is direly needed for the existing as well. Having public go into the Hardinger Institution for visitation is always troublesome. So this will really provide a much-needed large visitation area for the campus as a whole. And then we also integrated a large kitchen. As Jerry mentioned, this kitchen will be a full-service kitchen for not only this facility but for the whole campus, so we can pre-plate to go to the existing facility and then have more bulk food served to the residents in this new commitment center. We also provided a culinary classroom program area, and this is a very good idea, and we're going to be working with MJC and other outside providers to help with some of these programs. So this culinary classroom really affords a good place and learning environment for preparing meals and becoming a chef maybe down the road. And facility storage and larger mechanical and electrical spaces. Why don't you go to the next slide? I'll try to speed it up here. Here's some quick studies that we were looking at for a typical classroom, what the storage needs are, the computer top needs, some of the monitors. Next slide. Here's a study of the indoor recreation multi-purpose space, high volume, lots of daylighting into the space, provides a good opportunity for recreation as well as a lot of table and chair storage for visitation. Next slide. Here's a rendered view of a typical day room. A big primary driver for the design is a lot of natural light. We found over the years that natural light really helps normalize that environment, calms and soothes the wards down. And if you think about it, staff are here, you know, all the time. You know, a ward may be here for 6 months, but staff are here every day. So we want to create an environment that's conducive to making sure we have a good, more normalized environment, a lot of acoustical treatment. Next slide. Here's a view looking the opposite direction where we have some separate areas for dining as well as TV, as well as showers and a staff station for the direct supervision of the wards. Next slide. This is looking to the west, and this is a typical view of one of the day rooms as you're going out towards the rec yard. As you can see, we have a large wall of natural light and glazing coming in to illuminate the space. Next slide. Here's a quick view of the front, more of the public side, and there are three primary areas on the exterior of the building. Obviously, it's detention. The other is the public face. And the other is the administration and visitation. As you can see, the large slope curve roof on the indoor rec, that gives us the opportunity for volume and to bring in a lot of natural light. You can see a large canopy that is a way to direct public into the facility. Next slide. There's more of a view as public would enter the building. You can see on my right, at least, is the administrative side. So we want to have a professional look for the administration side. And there were the large roof area for the indoor rec visitation. Next slide. And here's just a front overall view. Because of the high volume and this large, very prominent curved indoor area, it's really overpowering on the site. So we downplayed that a little bit by bringing out some sloped walls and landscaping features that bring that scale back down to more of a human scale. That's it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we have three additional design issues we identified that we would like to include in the next phase of design relative to radio system analysis and coordination between law enforcement and the juvenile hall. The central control card access system, updating that to the county's current systems, and also an arc flash study of the high voltage panels, all now required by OSHA. You may recall that you've previously authorized us to conduct those at our jail facilities, and we'll be systematically going through the county facilities to meet that OSHA requirement in the future. We have two recommendations before you today: to accept the schematic design as prepared by the Lyonakis design team and authorize us to proceed to the next step, as well as authorize the project manager to amend the contract for the additional architectural services needed to complete and return back to your board with the next phase of design. That additional work is in the value of $41,000, and those funds are already in the project budget approved by your board. All of us would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Hill Thomas, the architect, or Chief Powers? Supervisor O'Brien, I'll make that.
As this project gets further along, I think I'm going to have more questions that will pop up that I'll need answers to, and I have some today. Some on our existing facilities. We have 158 beds out there. What's our occupancy today? How many kids do we have in there today?
We have 141 today. Out of those 141 or 148, 70 are committed kids that would be eligible for that program.
Okay. A question about the 3.6 million county cash. 1.7 is considered land value. What's the other 1.9 coming from?
The county cash contributions are coming from the public facility fees, and we previously had asked your board to identify and use, if I can say this well, Jerry will help me, there was a state realignment in the juvenile justice between state and county programs, and funds came and are already present in the county budget and the probation budget for juvenile programs. We also have the criminal justice facilities fund, which is dedicated only for criminal justice programs. It's a fee assessment that's been collected over time, and those funds are available for the match as well. You might have noticed that we're going to consider asking you to swap those funds out because the state funds that are already in the probation budget can offset operating costs, and we want to preserve the ability to offset operating costs and only use funds that could be dedicated for construction match.
So where do those criminal justice facilities funds come from? Those like development fees?
They're an assessment. No, the criminal justice facility funds is an assessment on court fines. One of the few that the county retained in the trial court realignment. Most of those fines went to the state courts, but that's one that's retained by the county.
And what uses can those be used for?
It can be used for facilities or technology for criminal justice programs. And we have been looking at them for a variety of other county needs for Sheriff's Department and others. And so we are confident that that fund will not only support this, but a number of the other upcoming needs of the county. And the good news about that is because of our diminished general fund, we think that we'll be able to meet some of our other criminal justice needs as well. These funds cannot be used for general fund operations. And so we went back and took another look to be sure that we could minimize the impact on the general fund of not only the construction project, but set money aside for when the facility opens.
Well, I have questions on that, too. Looks like we spend over $7 million to operate the 158 beds. How much is that general fund monies?
Most the vast majority is general fund. There is some. I wouldn't say insignificant. There's some small reimbursements we get through assessments of parents. We charge like $13 a day, but our recovery on that's fairly insignificant. We get some federal lunch money, I guess is what I would call it. But the vast majority is general fund support.
Okay. And have we identified how we're going to pay for this operations of the 60 beds?
Yeah. As we've discussed previously, and as I said earlier, we've got 70 kids in the existing facility today that if that facility were open, I suspect a significant number of them would go over there. The staffing ratio on the new facility is 15 to 1. The staffing ratio for those same kids inside the juvenile hall is 10 to 1. So we get some economy out of that. For those 60 kids in that facility, it takes me 4 staff. For 60 kids in juvenile hall, it takes me 6 staff. So simply moving those kids over, we save county general fund by that. Additionally, if we move those kids over, we wouldn't fill those beds today. So we could take those, if we move 60 kids out of juvenile hall today, we could take those 60 beds offline, move 4 staff over to the new facility, to operate it, and we'd net two additional staff that we could use in either the commitment or the juvenile hall facility. Now, at some point over time, population will backfill behind those 60 beds we close in the juvenile hall. That's where the money that Patty previously referred to, the YOBG, the Youthful Offender Block Grant money that we get from the state. It's about $800,000 a year that we get from the state. We can also use that money to offset the expenses associated with this facility because of the realigned population that the state gave back to us. So I think we've got a pretty solid operational plan from a financing once we get there, once we open the facility. Now, long term, those 60 beds will probably fill up at some point, but we can control that. We've been controlling 158 beds for the last 10 years. We have the same ability to control our population essentially that the sheriff has to control their population. So am I confident we have the funding to staff the facility when we open? Yes. Will I be coming back to you on the day we open asking for additional funding? No. At some point, will there need to be additional funding at 3, 4, 5 years, whatever that time period is down the road, for that juvenile hall, those beds that we closed down? Realistically, yes.
A couple questions on the $41,000 we're asked to approve today. In the original bid, was there not any architectural design for two-way radio system or card access system?
We originally,
those seems like pretty
basic,
generic things that need to be in the building.
Very good question, Supervisor. What we learned between the original concept and the design work is how the two facilities are going to work together. And originally, we didn't believe that the state would allow there to be a central control in the new facility. And one of the things that's important about the placement and planning of the new facility is that the master plan calls for the 60 beds to expand over time, over a 20-year period, by three times, as well as the juvenile hall. What we were able to do in our talks with the state and with our work with the design team is identify an opportunity to put central control in the commitment facility, which essentially builds it now for the future. So we had planned to just use the old radio system over and the card access system over. And we believe that this is additional scope that we can achieve as a part of the project. The state has said that's okay. So now we want to design those two elements to the commitment facility. So we didn't think we'd have that opportunity. You're correct. Those are very basic elements, but they weren't included in the original scope of the project.
So our new control room will be able to operate the existing building?
The new control room will operate. Well, go ahead, Jerry. Probably.
The new control room, the existing facility will be able to operate the new facility at night. at night. We knew that by adding this facility, we were going to have to add an additional person to the control room because of, you're looking at a bazillion different additional doors and cameras. By putting the second control center at the new facility, we can close that. We can turn that off, and it will still be able to be operated in our current central control. What this allows us to do is to leverage the state money so that we'll have that facility there for build out. The other part that the card access does is we could put every door on keys or on buttons, but keys get lost and buttons, somebody has to answer the button. So by using the card access system, we're not going to have to be as staff intensive in that central control because many of the doors will simply be operated by a card. So it saves us that. On the radio part, frankly, it's a fairly recent issue. We found that we were operating on a radio channel that we didn't own. and so we felt like, well, we need to get on a channel that we have, that we're authorized to work on. And again, here's an opportunity using the state funding to leverage that to get the entire campus. Right now we have dead spots throughout our facility. We've tried to put repeaters in and stuff like that. If we can use this state opportunity to get the entire facility up to speed, it made sense for us for what's essentially a fairly minimal cost in design by doing it up front.
Back to that control room issue just for 1 second. During the day, you'll have to have your existing control room and then the new control room operated. So your two staff saving is down by one.
Well, no, because we knew we were going to add a second staff in the old facility. So what we're doing, instead of having two sitting in the same room,
you're going to split one and one?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's it for my questions. I just, you know, as we look at the future of what our needs are in criminal justice systems we have throughout the county, I think we need some more background information on how it's all going to play out as we look at jail facilities and everything else that we need to plan for the future. So just my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for Supervisor DeMartini?
Is the kitchen that you have in the design for the new facility, do you intend that to be used for the existing one also?
Yeah, it will provide meals for both facilities. Which the state has said is fine. Additionally, we'll have a culinary arts program in which those kids that are in the long-term facility will be able to get some vocational training and will assist in the preparation and all of that of the meals for the whole campus, not just the commitment facility but the juvenile hall as well.
The existing facility has some sort of kitchen too. I remember looking at it. And
very small, very small kitchen.
So you really probably wouldn't even use that one anymore then.
What we're thinking, frankly, is long-term planning is the new kitchen. We will abandon the old kitchen, but because of the electrical load that's over that old kitchen, the gas piping and all of that, it will allow us to move our laundry, which frankly we don't have gas to, so we've had to operate off of electric dryers and things like that for the facility, over into that old abandoned kitchen area. Because it's got the ducting, it's got all of that. So it will then allow us to do laundry for the entire complex as well. So we have a plan.
Okay. What about an area for a nurse? I know the existing facility has medical facilities. Will the new one have that also? Will that be duplicated, or when you just use one for?
Yeah, we'll use one for the current facility. Actually, has an outstanding medical area with exam rooms and all of that. We didn't feel like it made a whole lot of sense at this point to do that again over there. What we would simply do is, if somebody needed to go see the doctor and be examined in an examining room, they could simply walk over and see the doctor. We do have small rooms in each of the units in which they will be able to get their prescriptions from the nurse and those kinds of things, you know, get their temperature taken and that. But anything requiring an extensive exam or something like that, they'd simply just walk over to the current.
Okay, and it looks like these two facilities will complement each other pretty well then.
We think so.
Sharing the facility. Facilities for the kitchen and the medical services. Okay,
Okay, thank you. Anybody from the audience care to comment regarding this item or ask questions? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll bring it back to the board for approval or consideration somehow.
Yep. I'll make a motion.
Yeah, second.
Okay, so the motion is for approval of the two staff recommendations?
Yes.
We have a motion by Supervisor Kayser, second by Supervisor DeMartini. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we go to correspondence then?
This board has received a notice from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding the location change for the discussion and adoption hearings on proposed regulatory action for the possible adoption of gear restrictions, waterfowl, and upland game bird.
Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a notice from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding the continuation of proposed regulatory action and addition of document to rulemaking file regarding upland game bird hunting.
Again, to the Fish and Wildlife Committee.
This board has received a letter from the San Joaquin River Group regarding the 2009 Annual Technical Report on Implementing and Monitoring of the San Joaquin River Agreement and the Pinellas Adaptive Management Program.
Refer this to the Department of Public Works and the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a copy of the Turlock Irrigation District Annual Report 2009.
We acknowledge your report.
This board has received a copy of El Soyo Water District's audit report for fiscal year ending December 31st, 2008 and December 31st, 2009.
Refer to the auditor controller.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of the claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any board reports today? Okay, Mr. Robinson, do you have a report for the CAO's office?
Yes, I do have a short one this morning. I would like to inform you that the state legislature is back in session after taking July off. We anticipate that Democratic leadership will be unveiling their budget proposal sometime this afternoon. We have heard that the proposal will include Senator Steinberg's early proposal to balance the budget that would include lowering sales tax, increasing state income taxes, and vehicle license fees. The silver lining, according to the Democratic senator, is that those increased taxes would be deductible on your federal tax return. So we're not sure how that will fly, but that's the best we have so far. Realignment, the California State Association of Counties is continuing to meet and discuss realignment. It looks more and more likely that we will not see healthcare or social services realignment, but we could still see public safety realignment. The county has won a silver award at the state fair this year. We're appreciative of the effort put forth by our leadership in this endeavor. Silver award is a big deal in our state fair. And would also like to report that the new Eastside Stanislaus audio tour has been launched, featuring our own Supervisor O'Brien as one of the voices on the audio tour. We want to particularly recognize and commend Stephanie Allman, Keith Boggs, and the county's partner organizations for spearheading this effort, which has been very successful on the east side for a number of years and on the west side fairly recently. I'd also like to inform you that the Secrets in America, the video put together by our own David Jones, has been picked up by the National Educational Telecommunications Association that is represented in all 50 states throughout the United States, Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. And so Mr. Jones and this endeavor are getting some wide coverage, benefiting many people throughout our country. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. This meeting is adjourned.